Yep.
Okay, thank you once again, Rabbi Gottlieb, for giving up his time for the Torah of the Shul. Without further ado, Rabbi Gottlieb.
Thanks so much, Howie. Good evening, guten Zimmer to everybody. It's nice to to see all of you back after the Chagim. One of my funnier friends, upon seeing the title of tonight's shiur, quipped that he wasn't sure if Pixar was going to produce this shiur, because if you look at the title, the contours of Kedusha, inside, outside, and after. Some of you certainly have kids and grandkids. You know, there was a film by the Pixar Animation Studios a couple of years ago that tried to do something very daring for an animated film, just essentially to portray the inner life, the emotional life of the characters. So my friend was pretty much joking in suggesting that Pixar might produce this year, but you know how rabbis can get. Rabbis are able to find relevance in nearly anything, and finding relevance in two things that most mere mortals would say are pretty dissimilar. And so I did give some thought to this. I figured I would indulge this little setup here that my friend suggested. And I actually do think that there's something really relevant to that notion of inner life, inner, outer personalities, personae, and the topic of tonight's shiur, which is really an exploration of Parshas Achrimos. You know, on one level, you could talk about the dynamics of Kedusha. Kedusha, which seems to be a very ethereal, a very spiritualized concept, I want to suggest, and I think the Parsha before us provokes us to think that there is a kind of spatial dimension in some way. You can talk about an inner and an outer of Kedusha in a coherent way. It's not just incoherent to talk about the inner and the outer dimensions of Kedusha. I think in the film, in Inside Out, you saw multiple personalities. And I don't mean multiple personalities in the clinical sense, in the DSM sense, but multiple personalities in that, in the more colloquial and everyday sense, that we react to things in different ways, different experiences, different phenomena take on different characteristics. And I think Parshas Achrimos also either suffers or is richly rewarded by a kind of duality. What do I mean by a duality? Well, think about Parshas Achrimos from a spatial and temporal point of view. Let's focus on the temporal, the time sequence or the time continuum. In a leap year like this year, Achrimos is always found in conjunction with Pesach. That's just how in a leap year Achrimos falls out, like it does this year. And it harks back to not the first Pesach, but pretty close to the second Pesach. And why is that? Why is Achrimos immediately going to conjure up an image of the second Nisan in Jewish history? Well, how does the Parsha begin? When does the Parsha take place? After what? The death of the two sons of Aaron. That took place when? And this is important to get this timeline from the get-go. Well, not Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but close. Well, I mean, I guess it's a machlokes, right, but it's the eighth day. It's fine. It takes place in Nisan. It's a question of Rosh Chodesh Nisan or the eighth day of Nisan. It takes place in the month of Nisan. Okay? But if I were to ask, so from a historical and a sort of spatial, where in time and in place does the Parsha take place when this narrative take place? It takes place in the month of Nisan. So that's one identity, an association with Nisan, an association with the 7 days of Miluim, the 7 days of completion of the Mishkan. But if I were to ask you, or the average Joe Jew on the street, the literate Joe Jew on the street, what does Achrei Mos, what temporal time, what season does Achrei Mos conjure up? Yom Kippur, right? This is the parsha that we read, not once, by the way, on Yom Kippur, but twice on Yom Kippur. Shachris and Mincha. Shachris, we read the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, which occupies, take a look here, just to the schematic of the parsha, which will come in handy as we work through the shir together. But the opening chapter of Parshas Achrei Mos, the entire chapter of Tesvav, is Avodas Yom HaKippurim, right? And Parshas, and then you have a section that occupies the entire 17th chapter. Tet Zayin is the laws of Shechita, specifically the laws of Shechutei Chutz, sacrificing a karban outside the precincts of the Mishkan, the requirement of covering the dam of blood, of kisui dam, of covering blood of a shechitas chaya. And then, starting in Perek Yud Ches, we seem to shift gears very dramatically and move into the parsha of Arayos. And that's what we read, of course, Mincha, Yom Kippur afternoon. Let's take a look at the first source here, the first Hebrew source. This is the Mechaber, this is the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim, Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, Siman Tav Resh Chav Beis, Seder Tfilas Mincha, Umotzian Sif Beis, Umotzian Sefer Torah, we bring out a Sefer Torah, but Koran Shlosha, we read three Aliyos, but Parshas Arayos, Ad Sofar Parsha, we read Parshas Arayos, Perek Yud Ches of Sefer Vayikra, to the very end. Okay, now, if I were to ask you, why do we read the first part of Parshas Achrei Mos, the first chapter, chapter 16, on Yom Kippur morning, Shachris? What would you say? Pardon? You can say twice tonight. Pardon? This is the Seder. Right. This is the Seder Havoda. Okay, so it's the Seder Havoda. Thank you, Tzvi. Well, why do we read the Arayos at Mincha on Yom Kippurim? I mean, some might say it's an odd choice. Right? We're reading on Yom Kippur when we're all dressed in white and we're thinking about purity and holiness. We're gonna read about these vile, these terrible vices. Mrs. Stoller. Pardon?
And the answer is
okay. Okay, so look, so I think what you say is exactly right. And look how the Chafetz Chaim in the Mishnah Berurah here on this sif explains it. Parshas Arayos, Mishum Shinafcho Shel Adam Machmadasan, that the soul of human beings, of men and women, are greatly desirous of these things, of these relationships. There's a deep passion. The im yesh echa chenitma, that's the word you used, right? The idea of the tuma, the impurity. The im yesh echa chenitma yachzer b'tshuva. That the sense of both desire and relevance, that this is irrelevant, we think it's irrelevant, but it's really perhaps the most primally relevant thing that we can think about, where a kind of prohibition that all human beings are subject to these deep desires, and this gets us into, you know, interesting territory philosophically about, well, what does sexual desire mean? Is it one of the chukim or the mishpatim? That's another whole question. Is it more along the lines of rational laws, like don't steal or honor your father and mother? This seems to suggest perhaps something a little different in that it's something that is driven by desire, not by something that is rational or subject to simple rationality. But either way, we see there's relevance to reading Parshas Arayos at Shabbos Mincha of Yom Kippur. At the very least, this public reading serves as a kind of motivational ritual, as a motivational exercise to not to not engage in these because there's some deep desire to engage in these, and it's such a common source of impurity. Yom Kippur is a day where we have to free ourselves from the shackles of this impurity, and this serves as a kind of symbol for all forms of impurity in some sense. And I think that's maybe what you were suggesting, Mrs. Stahl, that this is kind of a stand-in or a glyph for any form of impurity, and because it's so pervasive and so natural in terms of human nature, it's a very good prod or a very good it's a very good reminder and ritual to force the opposite of tuma, which is tahara. Bernie?
I was just thinking, could you see this set of prime? Does this affect the create like a marisha? Aren't there people who might see it in terms of sexual terms? So it's very possible that in the Kippur,
I think it's very primal, and I want to, when we'll come back, actually the last of the Mar Makomos, Bernie, I don't think you looked ahead. You're very honorable about these, but it's a source. The original primal arayos are derived from Adam. According in the Gemara in Sanhedrin suggests that all the arayos are embedded in that very elemental pasuk, that primary pasuk of Al Ken Yazov Ish, Es Aviv Es Imo. That sense of leaving one, differentiating from one's parents and clinging to another is part of the essence of humanity, and it's at the core of Arayos. So we'll make that case, but let's get to that case. So from a perspective of the ritual and a perspective of the liturgy of Yom Kippur, there's a kind of coherence between the morning and the afternoon. Morning, Seder Avodas Yom HaKippurim, Karbanos, ritualized purity. The afternoon, a kind of prod or a kind of wake-up call or a very powerful injection of a desire for purity. All of that makes sense. But I want to ask you to shift gears for a second, away from Yom Kippur and back onto Parshas Achrimos. Because the question we ask often, what is bothering Rashi, right? That we try to pedagogically, what's the problem here? Well, I think the Chafetz Chaim was also troubled by a question in trying to explain why we read Parshas Arayos. Because why does it really belong? And if the question is true when you ask it and you pose it about Yom Kippur, and yet the answer that we get is either going to be convincing or less so by the Chafetz Chaim. The real question is, what is it doing in Achrimos together with Avodas Yom HaKippurim? And what else? What are the other things that you would, once you're asking this question of the coherence, of the conceptual coherence of the beginning and the end of Parshas Achrimos, what do you want to throw into the mix when you want to ask about conceptual coherence or what we'd call Smichas HaParshios? Pardon? The other sections in the Parsha, namely Shchut Echutz, the section that we have here, the section dealing with Karbanot outside of the Mishkan, and the prohibition of drinking blood, and the requirement to cover Shchitas Chayas with Kisui Dam. In other words, once you're asking the question of conceptual coherence, you have to force yourself to say, what's the smichas of parsha of this parsha as a totality?
There's like a stream of blood running through all the different things.
There's lots of blood.
Even through their
rites. Okay, so we're going to have to... You're right, Svi. You're right. The blood is ki adam hu anefesh. The blood is very central in this, but we have to figure out why the blood is so central. And that's where we're going to go. Yeah, Bernie. Yeah.
Well, similar that you have a certain frame of...
Okay.
Okay.
So excellent. One general way, we'll dig a little deeper, but I think one general way is to talk about boundaries, right? Spaces and their boundaries. You could have asked, and some of you may have thought of this, well, maybe Shchut Echutz is more rightfully belonging in a different parsha in Vayikra. You could have made the case that it should have been included in the earlier parshios you know, the beginning of Sefer Vayikran. Vayikran Tzav, where it's first introducing karbanos, you know, a carbon in the Mishkan, and then there would be a prohibition of a carbon outside. What you're saying is that Shechutei Chutz belongs because this parsha is talking about boundaries, very conscious about the ins and the outs of relationships, the ins and the outs of spaces, of holy spaces and places. What one could have asked a similar thing about Dam, you know, where might Dam belong if it didn't belong here? Earlier, where, Mrs. Stoller?
In the body.
No, but in terms of the Torah's prohibition, where would, in terms of prohibition of drinking, of eating blood? Okay, losoch lo adam. Okay, that's true. But there are other sections that deal with forbidden foods, right? In Parsha Shmini, right? So in Parsha Shmini, there's forbidden foods. So dam is a form of machalas asuros, which it is. It's a very particular form of machalas asuros. So it should belong in Parsha Shmini. But yet, it's here. So, just to pose the question very straight, you know, directly, how do these individual parshios hang together in the macro parsha? How do these individual sections, these parshios, Avodas Yom Kippurim, Shechutei Chutz, and Karbanos outside, Dam, Kisui Dam, and Arayos, how do they all hang together? And I think, you know, one way that already Bernie anticipated would be to say that this is about intimacy. I mean, you didn't use the words intimacy, so I don't want to put those words in your mouth, but it's not very far off. Because intimacy is definitely a theme of Avodas Yom Kippurim, right? When we think about Avodas Yom Kippurim, we think about the kapara of Yom Kippur, right? But if you look carefully, let's look carefully, open up your chumashim and just read. Howie, why don't you read the first three psukim?
By the version of Roshach Remosh Nebine Aaron, the Korosam Zne Hashem Vayemusha. The Yom Hashem Amosha, the Bel Aaron of Chicha, all you go, Mocho Ace El Akodesh, based on Prophets.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you the following question. What you've read, or what Howie's read for us, does this day sound more like the day where you perform a ritual to receive forgiveness? Or would it really be like a hecha timsa, which is just a Talmudic term, an occasion? It's the occasion for a way in to the Kodesh Kedashim, behind the curtain, to the Shechina, to the Shechina's innermost chamber, which is the Kodesh Kedashim. Just reading these first few psukim, nothing else. What would you say that this day is being introduced as a day that is one that expiates sin and atones for chait? Or is this a recipe? Is this a map or a kind of a protocol for how to get close to God into the Shechina, into the presence of the Shechina in the Kodesh Kodashim? If you knew nothing else, I would say 9 out of 10 times you'd say the second option. Because there's really, in fact, you don't even get to the Inuyim of Yom Kippur until much later, right? Where do you get the Inuyim? The Inuyim come by Yutes and Chav, right?
But you can't ignore the first pasuk.
I don't want to ignore the first pasuk. Okay, I think the first pasuk is actually rather critical to the argument.
Well, but if you were going straight to the Kirbar argument, then you don't really need the there's a reason why all of this is happening.
Well, there's good kurva and there's bad kurva, clearly. Where there's kurva, although they're related in a very complex and critical way. Mrs. Stoller?
Are you starting to paint the picture of concentric circles, starting with the innermost one, moving out to the boundaries of as strong, because the end of it is where all these two most things that were made before is not allowed in Israel, because that's why, you know, Coach Rocky says at that point, that's why he kicked the other people out.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely extend it to the land as one circle among the many. I mean, the Gemara talks about the 10 kavin of kedusha that are given to the world, and there you have this. It sounds like a concentric circle model emanating from the Eben Shisia at the very center of the Kedushim, and then going out into the different precincts of the Mikdash and the Azara. So, and then, you know, obviously ultimately the world. But I think we got to focus on the real, on what's going on in this Parsha at the beginning to set the stage for any further or deeper argument. But what I'm challenging the very idea that Yom Kippur is the driving engine in Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim, leave it at Achrei Mos, and I want to suggest that it's the events and the protocol and the purpose of intimacy of coming into the Mishkan and to the Kodesh Kedoshim that occasions Yom Kippur. So let me explain. Let me try to draw that out a little bit further, because a lot of this hedges on when is this taking place? It's taking place after the death of Nadav and Avihu. And look here, what's going on in the Medrash, based on what Howie just read in Pasuk Beis, V'yomer Hashem el Moshe daber el Aaron achicha v'al yavo b'chol eis el hakodesh. Right? What is that? How would you translate that? Al yavo b'chol eis el hakodesh. Someone? Don't come just any time, or don't come. One could read it though. Don't come at all. Right? Couldn't one read it? Don't come at all. Never come. Okay, so look what the Medrash does in characteristic, you know, Kedarko Bekodesh, from a literary perspective, it plays with the inner lives of the characters of our great leaders. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda the Rabbi Simon, look at the source Vayikra Rabba. Sar Gadol Hayalo Lemoshe Bedavar Zeh, that Moshe was pained by this possibility. He was pained by this conversation. Amar Oili Shema Nidchaf Aaron Achi Mimichitzoso Bechol Eis, that maybe my brother, my beloved brother, is exiled, is banished from the curtain, from this the barrier to Kadosh Baruch Hu at all times. So then the Medrash goes into an extended darshanus, an exegetical excursus on what does it mean, ace? What is ace? Ace is a very generic, it's time. A time. So what is ace? So, yesh ace lasha, va'al yavo b'chol ace, yesh yesh ace layom. The Medrash is bringing different proof texts in Tanakh that talk about ace as different quantities of time. From the smallest, from the moment or from the hour to the day to the year to 12 years to 70 years and then finally la'olam. In other words, these are the possibilities, that all these possibilities are the ways in which Aaron might be prevented to engage God in the Mishkan. How does the Medrash resolve itself? Lo Eis Lasha, I'm reading two lines, the second, towards the end of the second full line. Lo Eis Lasha, V'lo Eis L'Yom, V'lo Eis L'Shana, V'lo Eis L'Yud Beis Shana, V'lo Eis L'Shivim Shana, V'lo Eis L'Olam. Ella, here's the punchline. Bechol Sha'a, Shu Rotze Likanes, Yikanes. That Aaron can enter the Kodesh HaKodesh any time he wants. Rak Shikanis the Seder Hazeh. Okay, so this inverts, or it's the beginning of the inversion, our whole concept of what Yom Kippur and the permission to enter into the intimate precincts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This medrash suggests that at some level, the possibility of coming into the Mishkan is ever present. If you go into the Mishkan, you need to do it though with this particular protocol. The Parshas Akramos eventually tells us that it's a mandated, you must go in once a year. Can you go in other times? Possibly. But you must go in once a year. That year, that date happens to be the 10th of Tishrei. That date happens to be associated with Kapara for Bnei Yisrael, vis-a-vis the Luchos, the breaking of the second tablets. But the prime driver is Aaron's entry into the Mishkan. So the perspective begins to change. Instead of Yom Kippur being the dominating, the driver, and everything comes from Yom Kippur, what I'm suggesting is that intimacy, the motif of intimacy and entering into the sanctum of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's what drives the possibility of the kapara of Yom Kippur. And the question is, why? That's the question, why? Why should the entry, the coming into the inner precincts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Mishkan, why does that become the Hechatimsa, the occasion for the Kapara for Bnei Yisrael, and why is that all related to these other commandments that are found in this parsha, Shchut Echutz, Dam, and Arayas? Does everyone understand the move we're trying to make here? He can go in Bechol Eis, Rak Sheikanes B'Seder Zeh. So now that we've shaken up this directionality of Yom Kippur and the Mishkan, I'm going to restate the core problem that focuses on the Parsha and not on Yom Kippur. And so the question is, in what way is Yom Kippur the direct consequence of the Achrei Mos laws preparing Aaron to enter into the Kadosh HaKadoshim, and why are those particular laws associated with questions of sexual relations, ingestion of dam, and shchut echutz outside the Mishkan? Okay, so this gets back to the point. The point that we made a couple of minutes earlier, and that is, what's the setting again of this parsha? What's the setting? When does this happen?
Nisan.
It happens in Nisan. It happens on the eighth day, according to the Gemara and according to the Ramban. If you look inside, this day was the eighth day of the Miluim. Okay? So I want to suggest that there were 7 days of Miluim, right, consecrating the Mishkan, and then the eighth day of the Miluim was a consecration of the very idea of the Mishkan in the first place. The very idea of Kedusha that inheres in a polluted, temporal, contaminated world, that needed, that paradox, that possibility needed a special sanctification. Right? What does the Gemara say? What does the Pasuk say about the Mishkan? What is it? What a very powerful language. Look. Look at Pasuk Tet Zayin. Very powerful words. V'chiper al hakodesh mitumos b'nei Yisrael. Remember, this is not Yom Kippur yet, right? This is not Yom Kippur. This is the eighth day of the Miluim, of the sanctification of the Mishkan, after the death of Nadav and Abihu. V'chiper al hakodesh mitumos b'nei Yisrael. That this should be a kapara on what? What do the words mean? V'chiper. What are we being mechaper on? What? Read the words. No, before that even. V'chiper al hakodesh mitumos b'nei Yisrael, that we're being mechaper on the very idea of kodesh, that what? That is in that resides in the Tumah of Bnei Yisrael. This is for the Oel Moed. Powerful. That the Mishkan that resides in Tumah, it dwells in the mess of humanity, that requires a kind of kapara, a kind of consecration, that this is possible. That the very idea of Kedusha residing within the world of Tumah, of the Hashocheni Tam Bechol Tumah Sam, that requires a kind of Kedusha. A Kedusha and a consecration of that concept. Because when you are Mekadesh a core, you allow for the possibility of Tumah that exists outside. That's what I want to suggest. This is a lot of these ideas I've developed from by Matthias Weinberg, a fascinating Baal Machshava. He makes this powerful argument that there's a relationship between the inner purity and the outer impurity. That the inner purity allows for the outer purity to exist. And the inner purity of something that dwells, Nadav and Avihu, they by their death, they show the relation, Bekrofai Ekadesh. With the death of my holy ones, I am sanctified. That can mean a lot of different things, but in the spirit of this approach, it means that Nadav and Avihu broke the bonds of boundaries, of the inner and the outer. Right? They were Makarev and Esh Zar, Asher Lot Suvam. But by creating that rapture, that loss of their selves by coming too close, allows there to be an outer. And once you allow for an outer, you give license to the possibility that there's going to be Tumah on the outside. What can't be defiled is the inside. Obviously, it's not a license to sin. It's not a license to actively create more Tumah, but it's a reality that allows for the existence of Tumah. Otherwise, it couldn't exist and the world couldn't exist. And that's what the force of Achrei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron does, because that's what Yom Kippur allows. That the inner purity of Yom Kippur and the inner purity of the Mishkan allow for the sin that resides outside. And with that approach, you can understand, I want to suggest, the rest of the Parsha. You can certainly understand Shchut Eichutz, as Bernie already suggested, because Shchut Eichutz, and if you look at how severe the punishment, it's a misa. It's Hashem is indignant that you would sacrifice, that you do shchit outside the precincts of the Mishkan. Why? What's so terrible? Why does it require such a severe punishment? Well, with this approach, you get a glimpse as to why that might be the case. Because this serves as a stand-in, also as a symbol of how strongly we must protect the inner sanctum and what belongs on the inside, to allow for the things that are sinful on the outside, but you can't have that in and out without a clear demarcation, and the boundary needs to be bright red. Literally and figuratively. It needs to be bright red. Because the blood is an excellent symbol for this dichotomy of inner and outer. Right? Think about the difference, and here's a doctor, so please be on call here to correct me. Blood, there is something elemental and universal about blood, as opposed to organs. The difficulty in transplanting organs is that there's a kind of stamp of singularity. There's something very individualized about the organ that will allow for the refusal of that organ by a host body. Blood, however, is bankable. Blood, yes, you need the right blood type, but within that general category, the blood is fungible. The blood literally can be used by anybody. The blood again, more metaphorical, but chemical. It talks about the elements and the minerals and the metals that human beings come from, biologically speaking, evolutionarily speaking. There's something powerful about the blood as a symbol of what is universal and elemental, as opposed to organs, which are the outward and the more singular. And ingesting ki adam hu hanefesh. That's precisely the theology behind this prohibition of dam. That dam reminds us, or it in some sense it is a symbol of us trying to lose our selfhood and melt into the elemental, melt into what is universal, melt into our source, right? The metals, the minerals, the source. And that's what you're not supposed to do. Because Judaism wants you to differentiate yourself. Judaism wants the human being to differentiate itself, him or herself, from its origin. And here we knock on the door of Arius. Okay? Here, if you look, take a look at the Maramukum, the last Maramukum, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Right? The Gemara in Sanhedrin, quoting the pasuk from Bereishis, Al Kein Yazov, Ish Es Aviv Es Imo, V'Davak V'Ishto, V'Hayu L'Basar Echad. So the Gemara is darshaning each of these elements of the prohibition, Ish Es Aviv Es Imo, Aviv Achos Aviv. Not only your father, but your sisters, Achos Aviv. Your aunt. Imo achos imo. Rabbi Kiva Omer, aviv eshes aviv. The whole point of this pasuk is that literally you leave your parents, right? The literal translation, you leave your parents, you cling to your wife, and you become one flesh. You move from the original unity or your source, and that's what incest at its most basic. Beyond the taboo, it's a desire to dissolve one's own personality and go back to your roots, to efface your singularity. You are not your parent. You're distinct from your parent. Any kind of incest at the family level is an attempt to wash away those boundaries, those personal, singular differences between human beings, and go back to your source. That is rapture. That is the same sin of Nadav and Avihu. That's the same spiritual sin that caused Nadav and Avihu to want to get so close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu that they would lose their individuality, lose their distinctness. That was prohibited. This is prohibited. The Arayos are prohibited because it's a biological way to go back to your roots, to go back to your sources. And that is the opposite of differentiation. That is the opposite of separation that the Torah is requiring. And here, there's a fascinating thing, because there are two types of sexual sin. And there are also what? There are two listings of the Arayos in the Torah. Right? This is the Arayos at the end of Achremos. But in the very next Parsha, in Parshas Kedoshim, there's another list of the Arayos. And if you actually look at the list, they're different. Of course, they're different, right? But what is the difference? If you look here, let's look at, I have on the beginning, on the first page, you see the different types of sexual laws, the sexual prohibition. So look at Perek Yud Ches. First you have general sexual laws, Chamaisa Eretz Mitzrayim, Asher Yishavtem Bo, Lo Sasu, Chamaisa Eretz Knan, Asher Ani Mevi Eslem, Shama Lo Sasu, V'chukosem Lo Selechu, V'chule. And then what is it? What are the actual Arayos? What's the first one? Starting at Pasuk Vav. Ish El Kol She'er Bisoro, all of your close relatives, Lo Sikrevu L'Galas Erva. Right, what is erva? Ki ervascha hena. They're your nakedness. They're your relations. But what's the specific order? If you actually look pasuk by pasuk, the order it starts with the arayas of parents, right? Father and mother. And then it goes into other relatives, but relatives, Ashes, Avicha, Achoscha, and then only then later at Yud. Only at what? Yud Zion, do you get, there you also, you have another form that's not a relative, correct? It's Isha and Bita. And then finally you get adultery, right? Where's adultery in all of this? You know, adultery, you would think adultery should be really at the very pinnacle, in some sense, of these sexual prohibitions. Maybe after incest, but one could argue that incest is so unnatural that they shouldn't belong at the top of the list. But if you look in Parshas Kedoshim, the list is reversed, basically. It begins with Ashes Ish, and it ends with the Arias of Avi and Imo. And here's the rationale. Achrei Mos is all about the problem of rapture, the problem of dissolving one's personality, going back to your original sources, your roots, whether it's Nadav and Avihu doing it in breaking the boundaries of the space of Kedusha, or someone breaking the boundaries of personal, you know, selfhood in terms of their biological parents. That's a form of rapture. The other form of sexual misconduct is rape. Not rape in the literal sense, and we know it, but rape in the sense of illicit taking what is not yours in a relationship. Taking what doesn't have a consecrated relationship. Kedusha, Kedushin is a consecration of this woman to the exclusion of all other women. What that means is that there's a relationship here when you take another man's wife or a woman sleeps with someone not her husband. There's not rapture, but what I'm calling here rape, it's a different dynamic. It's one of not relationship in the biological sense, but relationship in the constructed sense of kedushin, of you singled me out for this relationship, I need to be faithful to it. But Parshas Achrei Mos starts the prohibitions with the Arayos, because the Arayos, more than the Ashes Ish, are a form of rapture, or a form of undermining the personality, or trying to break the bonds, or the raptures, or the differentiation that God wants from us. It's a reversal. It's a way back. I think that's what the Kedusha of Achrei Mos is setting up for us, a possibility of intimacy, but only when there are boundaries. You can only have true intimacy, you can only have true Kedusha, when there is a sense of inner and outer, when there is such a thing as Shchut Echutz, when there is a prohibition of Dam, which symbolizes an attempt to undermine difference and undermine singularity. And so, if you take the messages of Achrei Mos and Kedoshim seriously, you get a kind of complementarity of both types of prohibitions, ones that force us to these highs, these spiritual highs that essentially do away with our personalities, which are very dangerous, and the other form of danger of a kind of thievery, or a kind of taking what doesn't belong to you and trying to appropriate it to yourself. Both are terrible temptations in the spiritual life that we lead, and I think Achrei Mos is a map towards getting some real access to what Kedusha is all about. Thanks so much. Thank you.